Chumba.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
My girlfriend and I are the adventurous type. We like to go out of the house as much as possible, doing literally whatever outdoor activity we can do. This time, we decided late in the day that we wanted to go camping for around a week. Neither of us have the typical job where your hours are set, and the best way I can explain it is that we basically work for ourselves when it comes to our scheduling. But in the grand scheme of things, we work for a larger company. We packed our bags and headed towards the campsite. It's a state park where you can camp for free for up to 14 days without permits or approval needed. We were driving along a dirt road for a while, and I made the horrible mistake of not turning on my high beams. I don't know why it was something I hadn't thought of doing, and it would prove to be something that I'd regret for the rest of my life. It didn't help that I was also going way too fast for the terrain and time of night. Within a split second, my girlfriend screamed, and only feet in front of the truck, we both saw a large downed tree in the middle of the road. There was little I could do other than slam on the brakes and hope that we could stop before hitting the tree. Of course, we weren't that lucky. We crashed into the tree, and I was out for a couple of seconds. I remember waking up really groggy and the ringing in my ears was very intense, but my main priority was making sure that my girlfriend was okay. For purposes of streamlining the story, I'll just call her Jessica. I looked over at Jessica and she was completely out. It was dark, but the moon was lighting up her face enough for me to see that her eyes were closed. I yelled her name to try to wake her up, but she wasn't responding to it at all. I took my phone out of my pocket and turned on the flashlight and pointed it at her. I didn't really know what to expect, but what I saw was something I definitely would not be able to predict at all. I saw the blood first. She was wearing a white shirt, so it was pretty apparent. And then, of course, I noticed the tree branch puncturing through her chest. It wasn't a huge branch. It was probably the same circumference of maybe like a finger or something. I know that's kind of a strange comparison, but I literally can't think of anything else to compare it to. It had come through the windshield, and it was still attached to the tree. I didn't want to shake her because I didn't want to cause any more trauma to her body in the process of trying to wake her up, so I just didn't touch her at all. I tried calling 911, but there was no service. I started trying to think of what I could do to help her, but there were so few options. The truck wouldn't even start, so even if driving away was the right idea, it wasn't an option. I had a knife in my pocket, so the next logical solution in my mind was to cut the branch from the tree and try to get her out of the truck and lay her down on the side of the road so I could get help, knowing someone wasn't going to crash into our truck and only make things worse. I hopped onto the hood of the car and tried so hard to cut that branch, but the knife was small and I was getting nowhere with it.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I started to panic. It had already been over 30 minutes and she still hadn't woken up. I got back into the truck and I just started to pray. And that was weird for me since I hadn't prayed since I was a kid, but at this point I was willing to try anything. It felt like I was praying for hours, but only another 30 minutes had passed. I was only holding on to this glimmer of hope because she wasn't actively bleeding during that 1 hour. The branch wasn't in the center of her chest, so I was hoping that it missed her heart. I felt her pulse and it wasn't strong, but it was still there. All I could do was wait for someone to hopefully come along and help us. I don't know if it was God or luck, but I started to see light coming from behind us. It filled the inside of the truck, and I got out as fast as possible and started screaming and waving at the driver. He stopped right behind her truck and rolled down his window and asked what was wrong. I started explaining to him fast, and he told me to slow down since he couldn't understand me. I explained slower, and the expression on his face changed instantly when he realized what I was saying. He got out of his truck and went over to the passenger side door with his flashlight and shined it on Jessica. I heard him curse under his breath and told me that the only hope that she had would be to cut the branch and try to drive her down the mountain to the EMT station since he also had no service. He had a chainsaw in the back of his truck, and I was terrified the shaking of the branch would hurt her even more, but there really was no other choice. He started sawing about a foot in front of her chest. I covered her with a blanket to try to minimize any sawdust from getting in the wound. It did vibrate her body a little bit, but she wasn't conscious, so at least she wasn't in pain, so I thought. Finally, she was free from the tree. The man helped me pick her up as gently as possible, and we placed her in the back seat of his truck, laying down. I got into the passenger side, and the man turned around and began driving down the mountain. Jessica stayed unconscious the whole time. It took us 20 minutes to get to the EMT station that I didn't even know was there. They were surprised to see us, since usually they get called to emergencies. They loaded her into an ambulance, and I got in with her. And the nearest hospital wasn't too far away, thank God. But it wasn't a trauma center, so she had to be airlifted to the bigger city that was around an hour away by helicopter. She had a punctured lung, but thankfully she hadn't lost much blood and her heart wasn't damaged at all. The doctor said that if it had been only an inch to the left, it would have pierced her heart, and she probably would have died within minutes after the accident. She stayed in a coma for almost 2 weeks, and when she eventually woke up, she could barely speak because of the pain that she felt in her chest. She stayed in the hospital for over 2 months. She had intensive surgery to try to repair all of the damage, but it's possible that she might even need a transplant for her lung in the future. I'm just grateful Jessica survived and have stayed in touch with the man who saved her life. Jessica is currently still on oxygen and has trouble breathing from time to time. I take her to monthly appointments and we're doing everything we can to hopefully someday see her fully recover, although we have come to terms with the fact that that may never happen. I asked her to marry me while she was still in the hospital, and she said yes, and no matter what happens, I'm looking forward to spending the rest of our lives together. I'll never forget that night, and oftentimes I struggle to forgive myself for what happened, but I'm also glad it's something that she doesn't have to remember. This is a wild encounter that happened to me last year. At the moment, I wasn't so scared, but as I told people the story afterward is when I started to realize how scary and horrific this encounter could have been. One thing my wife and I love to do is hit up garage sales to try to find awesome stuff for cheap. I'm the king of bargains, and I often can't pass them up. I'm left-handed, and one time I got a brand new set of left-handed golf clubs for $30 because the guy was having surgery and wasn't going to be able to golf anymore, and that's the type of deals I hunt for. Well, last year in the middle of the summer, while my wife and I were garage sale hunting, I found what I thought was an estate sale. A fairly large house in my neighborhood was selling just about everything you can think of from the house. The couple running the sale was probably in their mid-30s, if I had to guess. I got talking to the guy, and I found out that it wasn't an estate sale technically, but there was just about everything being sold in that house at that time. The house belonged to the guy's father, who was still alive and sitting in a chair next to the garage. The man explained to us that his father was losing it mentally and that he was going to be living with him. They planned on keeping the house, but wanted to get rid of most of the stuff inside so they could renovate it and then have a house they could rent out. Most of the stuff in the garage was just junk, years worth of clutter that old people tend to accumulate. Then I saw something that caught my eye. It was a really cool military sword. It was engraved with all sorts of writing, had an eagle for the handle, and to cap it off, it looked like it was solid gold. Whether it was or wasn't real gold, I didn't know at the time. I grabbed the sword and asked the man if this was truly for sale, and the guy shrugged it off and said, Yeah, I'll sell it to you for $25. I gave him 30 and walked away with my new shiny toy. As I was walking to my car with my wife, I happened to look up and see the old man was now standing up. He looked concerned and almost angry. As I was driving away, I saw the old man walk over to his son and he appeared to be yelling at him. The son just kept putting his hands up in the air while the old guy was yelling. I was curious as to what they were fighting about, but ultimately I just forgot about it in minutes. That night when we got home, we were sitting in the backyard grilling some steaks. I was telling a couple of neighbors that came over about the sword, and it was only a matter of time until I went inside and grabbed it so I could show it off to my buddies. The night continued, and we ate our steaks outside and continued hanging out and enjoying the evening. Around 8 p.m. that night, one of my friends said that he thought that he had heard someone knocking on my front door. I didn't put any stock into that because we were out back and I figured that there was no way that my friend could have heard that. Not 5 minutes later, I heard my wife scream at the top of her lungs. We all turned around and storming into my backyard was the old man from the garage sale. He wasn't limping or moving sluggishly. He came back there like a bat out of hell and was making a shot for the sword, which was next to the table in the patio. I started to approach the man calmly, telling him to just hold on and relax, and he didn't listen to me at all. He grabbed the sword, and I kid you not, he took a swing. Thankfully, he's older and a weaker man, so I was able to just move out of the way, but the man was screaming erratically and claiming that I stole his sword. For some reason, I was still trying to plead with the guy, even though he was trying to stab me. I finally had enough and tackled this guy to the ground. I tried to do it gently because I was scared I was going to break the guy in half or something. I was trying to figure out in my head how this guy knew where I lived, and I had no idea. My wife called the police, who showed up pretty quickly, and right away the old man started telling them that I stole his sword. I was able to calmly explain to the police that I had bought it at a garage sale and that they could contact the man that I bought it from. It took a while, but the son was finally notified and he came rushing over. He must have apologized a million times, and I didn't press charges. The old man clearly wasn't there mentally. Perhaps the most terrifying part was when me, the son, and the cop were talking, the old man snuck over and grabbed the sword. My wife just happened to see him grab it, and she pointed it out right away.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I still think to myself, what would that man have done if my wife didn't see him pick up the sword? Would he have tried to use it again? I exchanged numbers with the son just in case I had to reach out to him again, and I became more vigilant of all my locks in the house. I never did give the sword back, and my conscience sort of eats at me for that one. Now in hindsight, I should have just given the sword back and just bought it from the son when the old man died, but I was thinking in the moment. And as of writing this, I still don't know if the man is alive. The only thing I can say for sure is that since that horrible evening in the backyard, I have yet to see that crazy old man again.
Hey guys, thanks so much for all the support. If you haven't subscribed to the channel yet, please feel free to do so. Where's your mom, Gracie? I turned toward Father and looked at him with a disgusted look when he asked me this. She's not my mom. She's just your girlfriend. He wasn't surprised by my response because he knew I never liked Carla. She will soon be because I'm going to ask her to marry me today. He pulled out a ring and said with a cringeworthy smile. I walked out of the room because I did not want to argue with my father over that cheap woman. Father started dating this girl just after 4 years of my mother's death. It was like she had put some spell over him because he was head over heels with her. She was absolutely disgusting, and I hated her. Only I knew what she really was behind that nice face of hers, but I could never tell him that because I know he would never believe me even if I did, so it was no use to even think about it. It was my mother's anniversary the next day, and I was getting ready when she walked into my room with a big, nasty smile on her face. Trust me, every time I see her, I feel like I should kill her right away. I have imagined different methods of killing her, but I won't do it because Father liked her. Black suits you, dear. She came closer and caressed my cheek with the back of her hand. I immediately jumped away from her and shouted, "Don't touch me." She smirked by my response. "Why do you hate me, Grace? You know how much I love you, right?" she said with the same creepy and cringe smile. "Yes, Gracie, don't be so hard on your mom," Father walked in my room and said while kissing her. "Do any of you know how to knock?" I got frustrated by their public display of affection. I was ready to walk out of my room in frustration when Dad said there was something important he wanted to talk about. "This year, Carla will be attending the ceremony as well." I turned my head in a jolt towards them. "Why? You are talking about the ceremony of Mom's anniversary, right? So why must your mistress attend it?" I said while gritting my teeth. But Father looked annoyed by what I said, and he started to scream at me that I should mind my manners and Carla is not his mistress, etc. I simply walked out of the room. I went directly to my mom's room. I locked it from inside just to be careful and started crying while sitting on her bed. There was a huge painting of Mom in the room. I was the one that made that for her birthday the year before she died. I started to bawl my eyes out because I was feeling so helpless at the moment that I could do nothing else except for cry. I remember the day Carla first came in our lives. I wasn't that much against her because I had seen my father being devastated by my mother's death for those past 4 years, and with Carla, he used to smile a little. I still did not like the fact that she is here to replace my mom, but I was ready to endure her for Father's sake. But one day when I was sleeping, I felt someone touching me. I jolted awake, but Carla covered my mouth with her hands. "There was some dirt over you. I was just trying to clean it." She showed me her hands with a weird smile on her face. "What are you doing in my room in the first place?" I asked her. "Well, come on. Isn't a mother allowed to see her future daughter?" And I did not like this response of her, and she was still smiling with that cringe-worthy smile. The touching started to get increasingly obvious. She would sometimes come inside my room when I was changing and would compliment my naked body. Sometimes she would get into the shower when I was already in there. Coming into my room without knocking became a habit of hers. I started to feel insecure and weird. At first, I thought it was just in my mind, but slowly, the things she did started to become transparent, as if she wanted me to know what she was up to. But obviously, my father was so oblivious that he thought that she touching me is something she is doing to prove that she is worthy of being my mother, and that's what mothers do. Well, my mom did those things like cleaning me, brushing my hair, kissing my cheek, and it did not feel weird. There was motherly feeling behind it, but when Carla does these things, it definitely feels that she has ulterior motives. The other day, she barged in my room and borrowed my panty, saying she needs it, but she never returned those after that. Instead, she gave me a new set of red laced lingerie. I never wore them, nor am I going to wear them in the future. These things are nothing compared to what she does when she barged into my room in the middle of the night. I swear that I hate her so much that I am literally going to kill her unless I start to like her magically, which, by the way, is never going to happen. After crying my heart out, I went to the washroom and washed my face properly. I came out of the room and went to the hall where the ceremony was taking place. My blood was boiling watching Carla greeting guests like she was the woman of the house. During the entire event, I just tried to hide myself as much as possible from the prying eyes. After the event ended, Father came to me and said, "Listen, Gracie, I just got an urgent call from work, so I need to go on a 2-day business trip this evening. It's important, so try to get along with Carla and not to upset her in any way." He was looking at me with a serious and concerned look. I nodded, and he left. That night, I was suddenly awake in the middle of the night by the sensation of someone's tongue in my mouth. I tried to get up, but noticed my hands and legs were tied to each corner of the bed. I don't want to be your mom, Grace. You know, I never want to marry your father. But I have to if I can come closer to you that way. She said and started kissing me again. You are so sexy. I love you, Grace. She moaned in my ears while slipping her hand inside my pants.
My name is Allie. I'm 33, and from the ages of 19 to 23, I was addicted to heroin. How I got hooked is a story on its own, but I have a better story to tell here, and that's how I got clean. I say better story, but it's still not a good one. In fact, it's actually pretty horrifying. But it was what I needed to get clean, so silver linings, I guess. Anyway, about 18 months into my addiction, I got kicked out of my apartment, and my family didn't want anything to do with me. I really can't blame them. So I ended up out in the streets. I was 21, 5'2", and 110 pounds soaking wet, so needless to say, I was pretty vulnerable. I think I'd have been more scared if I wasn't focused on scoring all the time. That's scoring drugs, not, you know. But as you can imagine, life for a young woman out on the streets is not a good one. And Jesus Christ, is it scary. So first thing you learn is that you need protection. Basically, and as a feminist, I hate to say this, you need a man. Now, I was lucky. Most girls don't get a choice, but I happened to hook up with a guy who had been an addict for about the same time as me, who was only a few years older. We didn't just get together so it'd be easier to score. We actually liked each other, and after a while, I'd say we fell in love. We spent the next 2 years together, just trying to get by, occasionally trying to kick the habit and facing all the hardships that came with the lifestyle altogether. Together, that was the important thing. It was the only thing that mattered. But I can't quite bring myself to type his name for a number of reasons, and you're about to learn the main one real soon. So this guy would do anything to protect me, and I mean anything. He stole from me, hurt people for me, but only when I needed to be defended. We were each other's whole worlds. And when we got 3 months in county for his third shoplifting offense, he had an immaculate record before his addiction. I missed him like I've never missed anyone else, not even my whole family. I want to say that I was able to make it by without him, but that's not the case. And when he finally got released, I literally wept with joy. I was so happy to see him. The cops had forced him to get clean in the county, and the first thing he wanted to do when he got out was get high again. Luckily, I'd planned a little homecoming party in advance, which consisted of nothing more than a 10-bag of dope. So we quickly found a safe, quiet place to nod out, then started spiking up. He went first, then shot up the second half of the needle, and we fell asleep in each other's arms. Something I'd missed so much I can barely find the words to describe. The last thing I remember is him trying to pull away from me, and I figured it was to go pee or something. I'd missed him so much that all I remember is tugging at his sleeve, not wanting to let him go. I'd waited months for that cuddle, and he could wait a minute longer. Just a minute longer. The next thing I know, I'm opening my eyes and I can still feel the guy's arm around me. You know when you just wake up and it's like you're not fully logged in yet? That's 1,000 times worse when you're on dope. Like it was actually like, huh? Who is this? Before a second before I remembered my man was out. So naturally I feel this warm, fuzzy feeling. I wiggle back into him and I pull his arm tight around me. Then I reach for his hand to lace my fingers between his like he always used to like. And it's cold.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Not just October in Chicago cold. Like, I need a pair of gloves cold. Stone cold. The kind of cold that made me realize something was horribly wrong. I barreled out from under him, spun around, tried to shake him awake, but it was no good. I remember I screamed so hard that I puked, and That caused someone to come running to check on us. After that, I'm not sure how long, the cops and the EMTs showed up and I had to answer a bunch of questions. It was OD, by the way, in case you were wondering. He just shot a little too much after being clean for a few months and his tolerance had plummeted so much that, yeah, his body just gave out. The worst thing is, though, as he was overdosing, he obviously tried to get away to get himself help or something. That's what the tugging must have been. A minute later, he must have slipped away unconscious. All the while, I was cuddled up, all snug in his arms. I slept with this corpse for maybe 5 or 6 hours, and that's something I still think about, usually at least once a day. I think about my addiction, how grateful I am to be clean, and that's the first thing to pop into my head. I can't type his name because it just tears me up inside, like it's the most triggering thing for me, so please forgive me that I'd neglect such an obvious little detail. I can't type his name because even though we were addicts, I loved him with all my heart. I loved him, and in some ways I feel like I killed him. He was clean. I brought him the shot that killed him. It's my fault. It's all my fault. And that's something that I'll never, ever get over.
I used to get bullied, and so did pretty much all of my friends. I witnessed some of it, and I couldn't believe how cruel and degrading people could be. One day, while talking to my friend Sally, who is my best friend, she brought up a boy she had made friends with in conversation. We were on holiday at the time, and I already knew this kid. He was quite pretty smart, awkward, and very clearly sad. She explained how he got bullied because of his voice, and how his ex-girlfriend was spreading rumors that he was faking his condition, and that he didn't really sound like that. She wanted to know if she could let him sit with us at lunch, because he usually didn't have anyone to sit with. I obviously agreed to it, not really knowing that much about him. I hadn't spoken to him a couple of times, and he seemed pretty happy about having someone to talk to. But I couldn't see any personality within him. Everything he did just seemed odd, like it wasn't really him. I know that sounds weird, but that's how I felt. His name was Samuel. An unusual name, but quite nice. He seemed like a kind person, but he still carried a weird vibe. After a while of talking to him, Sally and I got to know him better. He liked dark humor much like me, and he was really into Doctor Who. None of us really knew much about it, but we still let him talk about his interests so that he could feel more comfortable around us. He talks a lot, and I didn't even realize he had feelings for Sally until he asked me if she liked Harry Potter and what her favorite colors were. She soon realized this too, but was still getting over her ex-boyfriend, so she made it clear that she wasn't interested. But he wouldn't leave her alone. He was always next to her or somewhere nearby, and it started to get to her, and she hated it. She felt as though she couldn't be alone. So I tried to do something about it. I wanted to help, so I turned his attention from her to me. I started hanging out with him more, often listening to his terrible, unfunny jokes, to his strange interests, and to everything he said. I tried to make it seem like I wanted to be there, even though at this point I really didn't. I wanted to get away from him, though. And he was beginning to tire me out emotionally with him constantly being there. He wouldn't leave me alone and wouldn't even walk home with me and my friend Grace, despite the fact that he lives in the opposite direction. At one point, I was going through a particularly hard time and being desperate for help and someone to talk to. I turned to him. I know it was the wrong move, but desperation led me to him. He asked a video call, so I agreed. I was crying, and he tried to calm me down, eventually succeeding, and just started making his horrible jokes and talking about things I like and stuff. He actually shouldn't have known about, but I didn't think much of it at the time, because I just wanted someone to make me laugh. Laughter got me through a lot of hard times, and I began to think he wasn't so bad after all. I started talking to him through video almost every day after school, and I noticed him being around even more often. Then one day, he said he needed to tell me something, which turned out to be a confession. He confessed that he had a crush on me. But I had to go because my mom wanted to watch a movie with me when I got home. I had about 10 video and voice messages from him, all of them of him apologizing because he'd apparently thought I hadn't actually left to go watch a movie, but was instead avoiding him because of what he told me. I felt horrible. I didn't mean to upset him, and he was crying. I explained that I really did go to watch a movie, and that's why I had left. Fortunately, he understood. After a while of hanging out with him, I began to get tired of him again, with him constantly being there. And now also knowing that he had a crush on me, I thought back to the situation with Sally, and began to spot the same things in our friendship. He got clingy, and just damn right annoying. So I politely explained to him that I didn't want to sit with him at lunch anymore. He still insisted that I sit with him, but I declined, and just told him to go away every time he approached our table. One particular incident, though, made me lose all respect for him. He would sometimes randomly walk with me and Grace, as I mentioned before. I often stayed at her house after school, and we would watch weird videos we'd found in her recommended feed. When about an hour later, we heard a knock at the door. She went to answer, thinking it was her parents. But needless to say, it wasn't. It was Samuel. I heard his voice and dropped to the floor, hoping he hadn't seen me. After a long while of silence, I proceeded to army crawl over to the door to see if he was still there. "I'm lost. I can't find my house. Can you guys help me?" he asked. Liar. How could he possibly not know where his house is? And it's not like I knew where it was either. I'd never been there. He persisted and continued to knock on Grace's door. She was hiding in the living room, and we came to the decision that we would hide in the conservatory until he went away. So that's what we did. Some time passed before Grace chose to climb onto the desk and see if he was still there. She turned to look at me and pointed in the direction that she was looking. "He's still there. He was looking directly at me. He waved at me." She whispered, "This couldn't be happening. This wasn't happening. We weren't trapped by him. He wasn't outside. This is all a joke or something." But Grace's face looked so scared and in way angry. I awkwardly got my stuff and told her I was going to head out to get him the hell away from her house. She reluctantly agreed, and I left with him. I offered to walk him down to the shop and let him go from there, but he refused to let me leave. He told me he couldn't see very well and that he'd almost gotten hit by a car earlier. Complete BS. This boy had boasted many times about how good his eyesight was, so there was no way he suddenly couldn't see despite his apparent sight problems. He flawlessly led me to his house at this point. I was in an area completely unknown to me, and I began to worry how I would get home. It was already dark, and there was no way I was going to wander an area I had never been in, especially in the dark. Who knows what kind of creeps would have been hiding out there? I brought this up to him, and he assured me that his mom would drop me off, but I didn't want that. I didn't want him to know where I lived with how he was acting. I was fully convinced he would try to pull something. I suffer from symptoms of schizophrenia, and this didn't at all make it better for me. I felt unbelievably unsafe at that moment and wished that I hadn't left Grace's. Countless minutes dragged on as I sat and waited in his room, surrounded by his cats. They were the only thing keeping me from snapping. After they dropped me off at my house, I went to my mom and broke out in tears. I couldn't take it anymore. He'd gone too far this time. So my mom said she was going to report him for it, because he wasn't going to cause me this much stress and get away with it. I agreed at the time, but soon after, I asked my mom to just forget it. Maybe this would all go away. But it didn't. The next day, I told him that I wasn't allowed to talk to him anymore because my mom told me not to. But he still refused to leave me alone. I obviously got mad due to having enough of his crap and had a complete mental breakdown, saying that I was going to get Tim, my boyfriend, on him because I was done. Grace and Felicity, my other friend, tried to take me to one of their most trusted teachers. But a few other teachers, despite seeing me crying hysterically, refused to let us through, because they said that she probably wouldn't be able to help us. So, we found another teacher and explained the whole situation to her. She assured me that she would speak with him and attempt to get this sorted out throughout the entirety of my geography class. I was having major anxiety, but I calmed down a bit in math. And when lunch came about, I saw Grace standing next to the door holding someone else's stuff. "What the hell is this about?" I questioned. "I don't know. He just dumped it on me and left. Now he's in the toilet," she told me. Then one of my male friends who knew about the situation, Chad, approached us and offered to take his stuff while we left. I thanked him a million times and we hurried away. We reached the hall and sat down at the table where Sally and Felicity were, and everything seemed fine until he showed up again. He seemed pretty angry, so I assumed the teacher we'd spoken to had talked to him. I began to panic, thinking that this wouldn't end well, that we were in danger. Then Rafita, another close friend, walked over to him, attempting to save me from an episode. She told him that I didn't feel good and that he should probably go. But he completely ignored her and asked me if I wanted some food. I nervously shook my head and he started saying that he was going to pass out and that he needed to sit down. Rafita calmly told him that he could go sit somewhere else because this isn't the best time. He turned to her, fury in his eyes, and yelled. Now I hid my face in my hands and felt weak, like I was going to start hyperventilating. He sat down and Rafita, having had enough of this too, grabbed my arm and said, "Come on, let's go," while dragging me away. And the others followed. He also left the hall, but luckily he didn't follow us. Then all of a sudden, the built-up stress and anger caused me to start hyperventilating and crying, because I felt like I put not only myself, but the others in danger. I didn't know what to do anymore. Then Chad came and said that he'd talk to him for me, and asked him to sit with him instead of us once again. I thanked him with all my heart, and we went back to the hall. One of my old friends, Shayla, is now transgender, and his name is Jaden, came up to us, and we told her about the entire situation. She told us that this wasn't the first time something like this had happened, and that he had a book in which he wrote about plans for mass homicide, and that he called it Samuelism. Then Chad returned and told me that Samuel wants to talk to me after science, and how I probably should, so after science I waited for him. And he said he hadn't realized he was causing a problem. Shut up, of course, you did. How can you be so dumb, oblivious to your own actions? He then proceeded to tell me how bad his day was, and I ended up having to walk him to the office. I told Tim about it, and he said he would meet me after school on Wednesdays and sort it out if he didn't stop. I was very thankful for this. I just wanted Samuel out of my life, but he still wouldn't leave me alone. After all, that he was specifically moved next to me in English class after everything that happened on Friday. He still persisted with his little games that day. It was parents' evening at school, so I went with my mom and left my phone at home. When I got back and looked at my phone, my heart dropped. 20 messages, 20 of them within half an hour, all from Samuel. I started ranting about all of this to myself and even went into the bathroom to practice what I was going to say to him the next day. I started crying again, because all of this was just too much to bear. But then I decided to do something. I decided to call him out on all of his stuff, and inform them that a troubled childhood is an excuse to put someone in this situation. He actually tried to guilt trip me into forgiving him by telling me his awful childhood. And I admit that I felt bad for him because no one should have to go through that kind of pain. But to show him that he isn't the only one who has to deal with things in the past, I told him about myself halfway through me explaining that I had a lot of trouble showing and experiencing emotions as a child, and that I had a lot of violent homicidal thoughts. He interrupted me, saying that he also didn't have emotions and that he had tried to kill someone because he thought it was funny. This actually pissed me off, because not only was he interrupting me to add to his story and trying to make me feel even worse, he was trying to one-up me on my suffering. If you ask me, that is absolutely disgusting. You don't compare struggles because you only have your own experiences to go off. Don't try to make another person feel as though their problems don't matter, and that they shouldn't ask for help when their problems because they're too small. That's just wrong. I calmly told him that I let him finish his story without interruptions, and that it was only fair for him to let me finish mine. That way, too, he quickly apologized, being caught out on his crap. I told him the rest of my story, and let him realize that he really wasn't the only one who had gone through stuff in his childhood. He then began begging me for another chance at being my friend, but I declined, and decided to talk with Sally instead, ignoring the rest of his messages every day. Until that point, and even for a while after, just me feeling like I was going to die, I actually contemplated suicide for a while because I couldn't deal with his constant presence. I was afraid to leave my house because I felt like he would be there. I know this is a bit weird, but I felt that way because of the schizophrenia. My episodes began getting more frequent and severe. There were periods of time where I could not concentrate in class and actually could hear what the teacher was saying because of my auditory hallucinations. I generally felt like crap, and it got so bad that I felt like I didn't want to be here anymore. But after telling him to bugger off, I felt like a giant weight has been removed from my chest, and that I could breathe my own air again. Not for long, though, because he kept trying to come back into my life despite me refusing to be his friend ever again. I was still there for him, but only in absolute emergencies, and by that, I mean that only if he was on the verge of dying. I wish I could say that he left me alone since then and that I never saw him again after that, but I couldn't.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Because I still see him around at school, and unfortunately, he's friends with my friend Brian. So I still have to hang out around him, which sucks. He annoys me purposely to get my attention by calling himself God and other things that suggest he thinks way too highly of himself. Anyway, that's about it for my story. Samuel, please shut up about your godly status for a second and realize that the reason people hate you is because you do this not once, not twice, but always. So pause, think, and stop so that you don't mount any more brains.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.